Blog Talk Radio.
What we need is some sort of revolution. Pain and greed, there's gotta be retribution. Do we all just run and hide till the very last one has died? What we need is...
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Stay in Sports Podcast. This is episode 16. That, as always, is Cody Canada and the Departed leading us in. I am Sean Kernahan, joined as always by Torsten Sporn. What's going on, Torsten?
Another day in paradise, my friend, and I'm glad to be finally done with about 20 fantasy baseball drafts. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. I think I limited myself to 5 or 6 leagues this year, which is still quite an undertaking, especially since they all tend to come this weekend that we just finished up. So we figured it'd be no better time than that to talk, you know, things that we learned about over this draft weekend. We'll probably focus on some of the decisions made in the league that you and I are in together. And then we'll also look at some of the guys that are available in a vast majority of the league that people listening will probably, you know, can probably go out and pick up on their waiver wire free agency right now that could help them this year. So let's just go ahead and start off with our league. It's a head-to-head points league. It is 10 teams, but it is a pretty deep roster. So it kind of acts closer to a 12-team league than does a 10-team league. And we did have 2 keepers in it this year. What stood out to you in the league, in the draft this weekend? Sorry.
Well, right off the bat, with 2 keepers, we basically start in the 3rd round. And I was completely shocked that both Giancarlo Stanton and Paul Goldschmidt were still available. And with the 2nd pick, I was guaranteed to get one of them. And when the 1st pick was Robinson Cano, who I was also surprised was still available, then I pretty much had my pick of those 2 guys. And I was absolutely delighted to add Giancarlo Stanton. And I'm also surprised. There's one thing that really, really shocked me. Generally speaking, in points leagues, there's a bit of a premium on starting pitchers. And the consensus so far has been that starting pitching is really, really deep this year. And I happen to be one of the few that don't see it that way. So I went fast and heavy on the frontline starting pitchers, and they were available for me. So I was quite thrilled with that. What stood out to you?
Yeah, and you're talking about some of the guys that are available. I will go ahead and qualify some of that in that Robinson Cano was available because my brother in the league decided to keep Zach Greinke. You will see some homer moves, and that was one of them. Then Robinson Cano went number 1 overall in the draft, ahead of Giancarlo Stanton and Paul Goldschmidt to a Mariners fan. So there's some of the homer moves in there. It's still interesting to see the Goldschmidt and Stanton were there, but you know, so that's going to happen sometimes. They have some homer moves. And when it comes to keepers, there's a move made that I really found intriguing and liked, and it wound up not mattering in the end, as she wound up getting the 3rd person in her 1st round anyway. But one of the owners in our league had the decision between Michael Brantley, Jose Altuve, and Miguel Cabrera, and went ahead and kept Altuve and Michael Brantley, which I thought was both pretty ballsy, but also smart at the same time. Now, again, Miggy fell to her, and she wound up picking him up anyway. I liked that idea of going and keeping Altuve and Brantley, 2 guys that I know you and I both talked up early on in the fantasy baseball previews.
I think that was a spectacularly good business there, and it was Aaron that did that, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought I remembered that correctly. It was brilliant because as far as across the board outfield offensive production, you're not going to find a whole lot better than Michael Brantley. And Jose Altuve is probably the best player to have at a very shallow second base position. And Miguel Cabrera is not the guy who's going to hit 360 with 45 homers and 135 RBIs anymore. He's still a spectacularly good hitter. He's still going to hit over 300. He'll still probably hit 25 to 30 home runs and knocking over 100. But he's no longer in a stratosphere of his own as far as offensive fantasy production. Still a wonderful guy. Still, you could make an argument for keeping him on most teams, but I think Aaron made exactly the right choice in keeping the two guys that she did.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned you went fast and heavy with the starting pitching. I know I did as well. I wound up with 6 guys of my pitchers are first or second man in the rotation type guys. So I was with you in that. I went heavier on starting pitching, especially in the points league, than I typically do. And I really liked it, and I've actually already made a move from that strength to get a couple of high upside guys. I did give up Garrett Cole, but I got some other guys that fit my roster needs elsewhere, as I have a need in outfield, need somebody a little bit more consistent there. But I did think that the pitchers needed to go early. I spent a lot of early picks there, but there are still some pitchers available out there. But I was with you. I went pitchers heavy early, and I like the way that turned out.
Yeah, I do too. I was fortunate enough to end up with David Price. I wanted to jump on Adam Wainwright too. I saw that he was available in the 6th round there, but Robert jumped in and took him a couple picks ahead of me, so I ended up settling for Matt Harvey. I was delighted to end up with Masahiro Tanaka as well. I mean, I can say that now because his elbow appears to be good. If that ends up by May costing him a season, then I won't be quite as delighted that I ended up with him on the team. But
well, at a certain point, you'll just replace an injured Masahiro Tanaka with a recently healthy Jose Fernandez.
That's the plan too, and I ended up snagging Jose Fernandez in the 16th round. And the reason I actually ended up doing that, I wasn't going to go for him, but you beat me to Yordano Ventura by a few picks there, and I kind of had my eye on him. But I figured, well, you know, I've got a pretty deep starting rotation to begin with, and it's only going to get better come June when Fernandez is healthy. It'll be a bonus, too, if Masahiro Tanaka is 100% with that elbow, if the rehab option over surgery went well. And, you know, and obviously if the Yankees end up being an improved team, if they end up being terrible, you know, he's not going to get those wins. And in our head-to-head points league, a win is 10 points, and that's a big deal, you know, and a loss is minus 5 points, also a big deal in the other direction. So you want to get frontline starting pitching, and you want it for good teams.
Yeah, no question. Now let's go ahead and jump into the actual draft itself and teach some guys who may have gone higher or lower than you would have anticipated. One guy you could say went too high would be Xander Bogaerts, but myself and my parents are both the Red Sox fans, and shortstop is a very weak position. I know you and I at one point said we're just not going to draft a shortstop at all. So Xander Bogaerts went pretty high, but again, there was a couple of Red Sox fans in there. Some fandom played into it along with position scarcity, so those things happen. But what really jumped out to you other than some of the homer moves and the complete lack of anything impressive at the shortstop position?
Well, what jumped out to me is that a couple of first basemen went off the board in the 4th round, and Adrian Gonzalez and Freddie Freeman. And, you know, both of those guys are good baseball players. They are definitely worth having on your fantasy team. But, you know, there were some really, really big impact bats still available at that point in the draft. And for perspective, while Adrian Gonzalez was going in the 4th and Freddie Freeman was going in the Duda, went in the 19th round to Brandy. And last year he hit 30 home runs and 92 RBIs. Now that's 4 more home runs than Adrian Gonzalez said. It's not as many RBIs, but Freddie Freeman hit 18 home runs and knocked in 78 runs. That trails, and by a significant margin in both categories, Lucas Duda. And you could also say that the Mets are going to be probably significantly better than the Atlanta Braves this year. So, you know, the fact that Lucas Duda went essentially 15 rounds after Freddie Freeman, that is something that really jumped off the board at me. And, you know, he's not as well known of a name. He doesn't come with all the hype. But, you know, I guess some people follow the names a little bit. And I think that Brandy, otherwise known as your soon-to-be wife and soon-to-be mom of your baby, is, you know, had a really astute pick up there to kind of pick up that he was on the board and grab him for a really, really cheap 30 home runs.
Not only him, but she also got Steve Pierce in the 21st round, who is, you know, between the two guys, you're basically going to get Adrian Gonzalez plus production between the two. So that was a good combination.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And in our league, too, as well, Steve Pierce has DH eligibility, I believe. And there is a specific position in our league for DH, so you got to have somebody that can slot in there. You know, they're not super hard to find, but after the really good guys at the beginning, like Big Poppy, for example, you know, it does thin out somewhat rapidly.
Yeah, and speaking of DH, and that is one thing about our league that is unique and really puts in a fun wrinkle of position scarcity sometimes, is at DH. And I picked up Sin Shu Chu as an outfield DH guy, and I funneled him into my DH spot. But then I wound up getting somebody at DH in the 27th round, picked two at the very end of it, 270. And it's a guy that I do not understand why he's not being drafted. And in most leagues, he's available, and he's first base eligible. And he's going to be playing every single day, and that's Kendrys Morales. The guy does have power. Yes, there's going to be some strikeout risk and some batting average risk. But the guy has power. He's going to be DHing. He's a better version of Billy Butler to me. And he's going undrafted or incredibly late in drafts. I cannot figure out why people are staying away from him as much as they are.
I may have some insight on that, and I think it's because he was absolutely awful last year. I think he made a mistake in not signing before he did. You know, he had a relatively productive year for Seattle, and I don't know if they tendered him a contract and he didn't want to accept, you know, that one-year deal and nobody wanted to cough up the draft pick. And I don't know if he was being petulant or the market just wasn't there, but for whatever reason, he ended up not signing until July with Minnesota, and, you know, he was awful. He was basically a vacuum of production, and I don't think the guy's career is over. I mean, he's probably not the guy that hit 30 home runs and had 100 RBIs with the Angels a few years back. But, you know, the truth is, for some guys, the end comes quickly. You know, not everybody can be Jason Giambi and hang on until they're 53 or whatever he is and, you know, be reasonably productive and a solid power bat off the bench, a good guy in the clubhouse. You know, Morales is a guy whose production just fell off a cliff last year. He's partially to blame. Inactivity may be partially to blame. Could he rebound with the Royals this year? Absolutely. And if somebody picked him up in the last round of a draft or somebody snags him off waivers to fill a DH or utility spot, they may get a big bargain there. But I'll tell you what, I was quite happy to end up with John Jaso at the end of the draft, who's also got DH eligibility. He won't hit you much more than 9 or 10 home runs, but, you know, he gets on base and he won't screw you in a bunch of other categories. So, you know, I'll take the safe bet rather than the risk on Morales there.
And to say Jaso, not only is he DH eligible in our league, which helps, but if you're in an on-base percentage league, he's excellent in that type of format and completely underrated. He's an easy 350 to 400 on-base guy, and that is somewhat rare in this day and age, especially from a guy who can give you some catching eligibility. That is a big, a very big advantage, and you know he'll give you some points in a points league. If you are in a roto league where it has on base percentage instead of batting average, that's a huge plus.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's funny in our league. I couldn't help but notice that Yasmani Grandal was picked in the 7th round, and I've talked a lot about him in recent podcasts, just because you know I was a little bit tired of the overselling job that Dodger management did about him. You know, all the pitch framing and the switch hitting power. He has shown some wonderful offensive things in the spring so far. He's got a great right-handed swing. He's got a lot of power left-handed. But, wow, catcher is actually pretty deep this year. And, you know, for perspective, you know, Yan Gomez was available for me in, like, the 20th round. Guys like Devin Mesoraco, Salvador Perez, and Evan Gattis went back-to-back-to-back in the 12th round. That's like a full 5 rounds later than Grandal. And I think all three of those guys, you know, offer as much or more offensive production fantasy-wise than Grandal. And, you know, there's just some certain positions and certain players you don't need to reach for. And that was another thing that I noticed. For all the talk we have about positional scarcity as far as the middle infielders go and stuff like that, we used to have that talk about catcher. The offensive catcher 20 years ago, you know, it was basically limited. You had Mike Piazza, and everybody else was a defensive specialist. And now everybody that sits behind the plate can hit a little bit and give you some offensive production. And, you know, a guy like Grandal didn't need to get drafted in the 7th round.
No, and I think that was a little bit of a homer pick, but absolutely, you know, your fandom can only go so far in a fantasy league, and it went a little bit too far there. That said, that pick was by my brother, who also later on in the draft picked up Howie Kendrick, who I think is an absolute steal in drafts. And, you know, he's going really, he's going almost 10 rounds later than a guy like Dustin Pedroia. And I think their production might be on par, if not leaning a little bit Kendrick's way. As much as I love Pedroia, he is struggling to stay healthy. He's had picked up an injury in the first week of each of the last two seasons. You know, he's just as much a guy that's a clubhouse guy as he is the production on the field right now. He's just not the fantasy superstar that he used to be. And a guy like Howie Kendrick can just plain hit line drive after line drive, and he won't put up the big home run numbers or anything like that. But and he is not going to be the batting average winner leader at the end of the year like he was hyped to be coming up out of the minor leagues. But he can certainly put up some solid offensive numbers. And I think a 10-round difference between a guy like Pedroia and a guy like Kelly Kendrick is great value on Kendrick.
I agree with you 100%. Pedroia was taken in the fifth round by none other than my wife, who was participating in her first ever fantasy baseball draft. I think she actually acquitted herself quite well and ended up with a solid team, but Pedroia in the fifth was definitely in reach. And Kendrick going 10 rounds later is an absolute bargain in that. But if you want to cut it even closer, I managed to snag Brian Dozier in the seventh round, who's pretty much a giant suckhole of batting average, but he has 20 home runs, 20 stolen base in that potential in this league, and you know, for his own personal marching and chatter society, and he went two rounds later. Colton Wong, who a lot of people are touting to be a big producer from the second base spot in St. Louis this year, also went in the eighth round. I think both of those guys will put up comparable, if not superior, numbers to Dustin Pedroia. Now, then again, Pedroia is playing in a very, very explosive Boston Red Sox lineup, so you know his production may see kind of like a bump by proxy, and especially if he stays healthy, he might very well justify the fifth-round pick, and she'll have the last laugh over both of us.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously got the potential, and like I said, the last 2 years, he was injured in the first week of the season, and it nagged him throughout the entire season. So a healthy season, you never know what may happen. Let's start to talk about guys that are available in most, if not every league. And the first guy I want to bring up is a guy who's not available in any leagues that I'm in, mainly because I am in them. And that's Micah Johnson of the Chicago White Sox. Robin Ventura came out today and he said that he's leaning Micah Johnson for the starting job at second base for them. But Carlos Sanchez still might take that away from him. I did get to spend a day around the White Sox this spring, talked to many people in and around the organization, and from everyone I spoke to, more than a handful of people have told me Micah Johnson has that job. He will be hitting ninth in that order. It is his to take and to run with, and it's pretty safe. We'll see if that proves to be the case. But from everything I heard when I was around that camp, Micah Johnson's a second baseman there. He's got incredible offense. He's got incredible upside. But at the very least this year, he's going to be a great guy for the steals. And with a lineup that's getting seems to be getting better, him hitting ninth as a kind of a second leadoff guy, there's going to be steals. There's going to be runs scored. And he's available in a ton of leagues. And I think that he is a great middle infield option or a bench option to fill in at times in middle infield when you need to catch up on the steals category.
I agree with you. I have not pulled the trigger on Micah Johnson in any of my leagues. And I'll tell you, it's for one simple reason. I've heard all of the hype before for a White Sox second base prospect, but it was about Gordon Beckham. And I pulled the trigger on him year after year after year, and he slipped farther and farther down draft boards. And I kept telling myself, this is the year for Gordon Beckham. And it never became the year for Gordon Beckham. Now, you know, these two things should be mutually exclusive. But I can't really have any real control over the things that piss me off when it comes to fantasy. And this is one of them. It's White Sox second baseman. So on general principle alone, I stayed away from Micah Johnson. And, yeah, probably not a wise decision, but, you know, time will tell. You know, anytime somebody has the word prospect attached to their name, it's because they haven't earned the title of superstar next to their name. So, you know, we'll see what happens with him, but I think the fact that he's available and is pretty much guaranteed the starting job at the outset makes him worth a look. A guy that I think might be worth a look in deep leagues. Our league, you know, the roster is pretty deep. There's only 10 teams, though. You can't really make a huge case for adding him to your roster right now. But if you're playing in a deeper league, you know, 12, 14 teams perhaps, and you need a little bit of depth somewhere, I would look at Alex Guerrero of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He has been absolutely hitting the crap out of the ball all spring. And he hit the crap out of the ball in AAA last year before Miguel Olivo bit off part of his ear. Even after he came back, he was hitting the ball reasonably well. And that's what he did in Cuba. All the guy does is hit. He may not be able to field for squat, but all reports have him improving. And while Juan Uribe, whom I love and I hope doesn't lose his job, but while he's been struggling, not in the field but at the plate, you know, they may be looking to get Alex Guerrero some more at-bats there. He might also become the right-handed portable platoon in left field with Carl Crawford. That right now belongs to Scott Van Slyke, but Van Slyke can play center. And if Jock Peterson doesn't quite work out at the outset, Van Slyke may very well be playing in center and could open up some playing time for Alex Guerrero. If he gets anything in the neighborhood of 350 to 400 plate appearances, he's basically a lock for double-digit home runs. If you can get that from a utility infielder that you're plugging and playing off your bench when you guys have off days, that for me is really good value. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I added him in the NL-only league, and I'm actually rooting for the certain downfall of Juan Uribe to come sooner rather than later so I can get production out of Guerrero, especially since he essentially cannot be sent to the minor leagues. He's a lock to make the roster, and at some point they've got to go ahead and put him in the lineup and see what he can do for them. I think he could be a really good, put in some really good production, if not right from the outset, one or two injuries away from being an everyday guy and not letting go of that job.
Yeah, I think that he's one of those guys, once he gets on the field, and if he can hit a little bit right from the outset, when guys start hitting, it's really, really tough to take them out of the lineup. You know, basically, the last, you know, he didn't start off this way when he was young, but the last several years, Hanley Ramirez has been a huge defensive liability at shortstop, but because of his bat, he's basically irremovable from the lineup. You know, you plug in a defensive specialist in the eighth or ninth inning to kind of solidify things out there, but if somebody can hit, they're going to play. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
Yeah, no question. Now, another guy that I like, and every time I turn on a spring training game that involves the Philadelphia Phillies this spring, there was a guy that was always making a play, whether it was at second base or center field or, you know, at the plate. And it's a Rule 5 guy who came from the Texas Rangers, who is now with the Phillies and has actually won the center field job, moving Benrevero to left. And it's Odubel Herrera, who in ESPN leagues, and I'm not sure about the other outlets, but I know in ESPN leagues he is listed as David Herrera because his name is actually David Odubel Herrera. But Odubel Herrera is a guy who, like I said, he's Rule 5, so that means he's got to stay on the active roster. He's on the Phillies, who are a terrible team, so they might as well go ahead and let him play. But he's got speed, and he has been hitting the ball really well all spring. And it's another guy that can add speed to your speed category, which I know steals is not a category that is lacking in baseball these days. But I think Odubel Herrera is somebody who is owned in less than 2% of leagues last I looked, and it could be, especially an NL-only or a 14-16 team mixed league, to be a real steal.
Yeah, no pun intended, right? I've been following his story a little bit through spring as well. And, you know, it's a nice story, but it's a very, very short list of Rule 5 picks who have really, you know, had an impact, fantasy or otherwise. If you're playing in a really deep league, NL-only league, and it's a roto league where you do it by category and you need some steals, the guy's definitely worth a look. But, you know, there's probably a reason why he was available. I think that if he was really a legitimate prospect, and, you know, the Rangers don't necessarily have a long history of dodgy personnel moves. You know, this is not Ruben Amaro that we're dealing with. It's John Daniels, who is, by all accounts, a much more astute evaluator of talent and constructor of rosters. So, you know, Odubel Herrera is a nice story. I really hope things work out for him, but I don't see him being a big factor in leagues outside of deep roto where steals are a real factor. I want to, before we start really cutting close on time here, I wanted to mention a trend that I've seen in the last few years towards the back end of drafts when people are starting to really dig in on relievers. A lot of leagues now, ours included, and even in roto leagues, holds are becoming a category. So it's worth taking a look at these dominant setup relievers. Like, for example, last year, Dean Betances on the Yankees had to have been probably one of the top relief pitchers in fantasy. He definitely had an impact. The whip was great. The strikeout numbers were great out of the bullpen. You know, I'm looking at the league that we have, and guys like Pedro Strop, Jonathan Broxton, and Kevin Quackenbush are all on the waiver wire. You know, and granted, we only have 10 teams. You know, if that's enough, that's plenty of there's plenty of closers out there available. But I think I would rather have a guy that's dominant in the setup role, rack up strikeouts, you know, keep the whip down and get some holds, not give up a whole lot of runs, not get a lot of negatives out there. Like, you don't want Jose Valverde. He might end up being the closer in San Diego this year. You know, right now Joaquin Benoit seems to have a hold of the job, but I'd rather have a guy that just consistently gets a high strikeout per inning rate, keeps the ERA down so you don't get those negative numbers from your relievers in a points league. You know, what are your feelings on guys like that, like Strope, Broxton, and Quackenbush, and their impact in fantasy?
Quackenbush is a guy I personally own in a couple of leagues, and if it was up to me, he would actually be the closer for them there. But I do think that the guys that can get some holds are very valuable. You look at the Wade Davis, Kelvin Herrera, the guys from Kansas City were incredibly valuable in just about any league, whether it had holds or not.
Can you imagine how good their bullpen's going to be when they get Luke Hochevar back?
They did lose Tim Collins, but really I talked to some guys close to the organization, and they're a little bit worried about the lack of left-handed arms, but you know, they've got
Brandon Finnegan,
power righties, who is going to be sent, it looks like, to Double-A, which is wrong to me. I think he should just be a dominant reliever from the left side. I think that's where he belongs. But, you know, I truly believe that the guys that, you know, dominant relievers have a spot on a fantasy team, whether you hold or an option or not. You know, the top hold guys are usually in the 25 to 30 range, where the top save guys can be topping 40, close to 50. So there's definitely a difference there. But I do think that some of those relievers could be really valuable.
Two, I agree. Really, and here's another note. Oh, are we done?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Really quick, I wanted to say some of these guys, you know, like Kelvin Herrera and Wade Davis, to mention the two that we just talked about from Kansas City, these are the guys that come in tie games. And they never give anything up, so they might get you a few wins out of the bullpen. I think Wade Davis might have had 7 or 8 wins last year. In a points league, hey, those go a 10 a pop, and that's huge from a relief pitcher.
Absolutely, and in a roto league, if you go ahead and do a lot of those guys, you pick up a point or two in wins, and you end up winning ERAs in the West and whatnot. Two guys, as far as job, you know, they just got one job. T.J. House just won a job as a fifth starter in Cleveland. I think that he's a low whip, you know, mid-3 ERA guy who, you know, won't get a whole lot of strikeouts, but is really consistent and could be really good there. Also, looks like Ryan Arua is going to win the left fielder's job for the Texas Rangers. He's got some power. He is a more of an AL-only type of guy, but there is some, 20 home run potential out of Ryan Arua. But T.J. House, going back to him, I think he's somebody that be a real value and something to look for in your league.
I agree. I think TJ House on a very good Cleveland Indians team that I think is underrated will get you some sneaky production there. And I think that's probably about going to wrap it up for us. We're coming close to our time limit here.
Absolutely. Thank you all for listening, and have a wonderful night.
Thank you, everybody. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter.